So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Centomatic. Thanks as always to Orage for their support. Also, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Patrick Holdaway. Patrick is a superintendent in the City of London Police, recently moved across from Hampshire Constabulary. More on that in our conversation. Recently returned from a two-year secondment at the National Business Crime Centre, where many of us in retail became very aware of Patrick and his work. During his time, he worked across a number of policing and government projects to raise issues around business, in particular on violence, tackling organised crime, as well as working on and sharing best practice. Patrick, thank you very much for being my guest this week.
Thank you.
So I always like to start in this way. Kicking off, I know you've recently moved across to the City of London. Just give our listeners and viewers a little update on those latest moves. And then maybe if you want to weave in how your journey into the police started, was that what a young Patrick dreamed of doing? And how did that all blend together?
So thank you, Paul. So yes, I've just moved across to the City of London to resume my role back at the National Business Crime Centre. My secondment finished at the end of December last year, and I went back to force for 7 months. And in the meantime, the city took ownership, full ownership of the NBCC, and then decided they wanted to bolster it. They made it a superintendent post, advertised, and I moved across. So I'm back, which is great, because previously it was a secondment, so it was time limited. Now I'm in the city doing that role, supported by the city. That should give the team a bit more of a continuity, certainly for businesses, because we know how people move around, so that's really important. No, I wouldn't say. I mean, I've got 26 years just gone now in the police. I'll be lying if I said I think it was an aspiration, although I think my mother did show me a photograph when I was 7 holding a police car. She did seem to think that was destiny, perhaps. But I used to be, I used to be an estate agent for many, many years before I joined the police, which is similar in many ways, because, of course, it's just about dealing with people and selling a bit of a concept. And actually, the vast majority of policing is exactly that, whether it's talking to any members of the public, challenging situations. It's just about talking to people, understanding what makes them tick and kind of getting on their level and then trying to make things happen from that perspective. So whilst it does seem a bit of a strange transition, I found it was quite as a natural type of thing to be able to do and come in to talk to people. So I did that, and I worked across all uniform during my time. And a lot of it was partnership and problem solving. So when I got involved with the business community in about 2013, supporting our then Police and Crime Commissioner, I found it a really exciting and new area, because I think from a policing perspective, it wasn't one that much work had been done, I found to be true. There was pockets as ever. So I think it was a great opportunity to come up with some kind of new initiatives. And the business community seemed really keen to want to engage with policing across a number of fronts. So I found it, you know, a real natural alacrity to kind of that kind of area. And I kind of stuck with it, really, I suppose, from that perspective. And hopefully it's kind of paid off and we're starting to make some real changes.
Yeah, and I'll come on to those in a moment, but I was really interested that you just mentioned your Police and Crime Commissioner there. There's a number of views on the success or otherwise of Police and Crime Commissioners, and I have to say personally, I'm in favour of the concept. I have to put my flag in the ground there. But you say you were working with the PCC. Was there a directive from them that business crime be one of the focus areas for the force, or did you take the project to them? How did that sort of come about?
So I think it's certainly in the scenario I was involved with, it was very much a business community coming to the Police and Crime Commissioner, because businesses are a community in their own right, and they have needs and desires and expectations of the police. They will pay a lot of rates and tax, everything else. So they have some certain expectations, and I think in some places they were being a bit challenged from that perspective. So I think it was the PCC was keen for me to get involved and understand what the issues were. So we were looking at kind of levels of business crime, the data that came in from that perspective. So I think it kind of built upon that. And I think it's also about businesses are there. Yes, they are subject to crime and we deal with it from that perspective. But as I said, they are part of the community, and there's some great work that we've done with businesses that have really helped us out in times of need, you know, even COVID. One of the big retailers came and helped us out in terms of helping to develop a storage area for COVID kind of PPE and that type of thing. So we engage with businesses, and it's a bit of one of those scenarios. There are some real areas of work that are quite symbiotic in what we would try to achieve and how they can actually help us, which I find really, really useful.
Yeah, fascinating. I've long sort of said, if you like, that, that you know, retailers and groups really should be lobbying PCCs more because, you know, theoretically, they get to define the policing priorities within their area. So fascinating that that came to play. Now, here we are. You're in the City of London. What does your day-to-day look like? I realise, you know, you've been there a few weeks, but what does the day-to-day look like? What occupies your time?
So I think the city is a bit unique. So it, you kind of, my work is a bit of a dichotomy between the kind of the retail world, transport, hospitality, which is my traditional NBCC kind of work, which we've dealt with. But the city kind of got different problems. And you're probably aware these last couple of weeks, we've had some demonstrations in place. So for them, it's about engaging with them around mitigating the impact upon their business, you know, whether it's banks, financial institutions, et cetera. And of course, protesters have a right and police need to balance that. But equally, people have the right to go to work. So again, you know, the police are in that difficult situation of trying to manage both sides of the fence and do it. And I think they've done a great job these last couple of weeks. And I think the feedback from the business community has really been really, really positive. So the work in the last couple of weeks has been very much around engagement with those elements of the community and also across the Met area around the West End and the retail sector around there and what they're seeing. You know, you think about Parliament Square, Trafalgar Square, et cetera. So a lot of the work's been dealing with that. The city has a very strong focus around finance, fraud, cyber. And it's an area, if I would be honest, the NBCC hasn't got too involved with, mainly because it's been very much a bit of a city prerogative. But we are looking to help support that and drive the City of London's police's agenda and increase that kind of engagement. So there's a lot of work we're doing around that. And I think a lot of the work with the NBCC is around about managing expectations. So, you know, we get retailers, we've had them the last couple of days phoning up, talking about particular crime series. And we and our role there has to be making sure that we engage with the different police forces and make sure that that's joined up. So X Force and those at Y Force and Z Force have had similar type of crime times and kind of try and drive and coordinate that activity so they're aware of it so we get the best impact and the most efficient investigation. And also, while satisfying that retailer, they can see that activity has taken place to mitigate that crime taking place. But of course, equally, there is an onus upon the retailer or the relevant business to do what they can to try and safeguard their business. And, you know, we think we've got a part to play around sharing best practice and raising awareness to do exactly that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned there people playing their own part, if you like. Would you agree that, you know, historically, maybe there's been, you know, quite a lot of tension between retailers and the police? And yeah, I've used the analogy before, you know, police have sort of said to retailers, or, you know, if you were a homeowner and you put all of the contents of your house outside the front of your door, and then you sat in your back garden, then obviously, yeah, if something gets stolen, as a police officer, you're going to turn up and go, well, I'm not sure that was, you know, maybe the smartest thing to do. From a policing perspective, did you feel retailers were not helping themselves? How did you see that relationship?
It would be fair to say, I think a few years ago when I first started to get involved, we were in the world where some security teams measured their success was how many shoplifters they could detain. Mm. As a consequence, you would know that a regular shoplifter would come into a store, you know that they would shop theft, and they would watch them with a view they could then detain them to demonstrate their worth as a security company or security operative. That's changed because the policing then went through kind of austerity. There was no way that we were ever going to be able to service that demand. So there has been a real mind shift. And I think the retail has been really, really good in terms of doing a lot of work to kind of prevent that. And I think some of the change from police forces is that the layout of some stores, which is primarily is there to sell goods, sometimes can conflict in terms of crime. So you will have a retailer, as an example, might put some really expensive goods near the front door because they want to attract people through the door. But clearly that also is a target for thieves. Now, it's very easy for me to go in and say, right, you've got to move it, you've got to do X, Y, and Z. But ultimately, they are there to create a business. And I think if policing's there for anything, it's to make sure that people can go about their life and do what they should be doing and, you know, and let police deal with crime. So I think, so there is a bit of a fine line you need to play from that perspective. You can't keep going in heavy-handed. You do need to understand from the retailer's perspective, and you just need to come about it in a different kind of way. And I, you know, there are a number of very, very good loss prevention leads that we, Paul, you and I regularly deal with to understand this, and they play their part in trying to manage their own organisations to try and reduce that risk.
Yeah, but I can just imagine, you know, yourself, you know, walking into a, you know, having had an incident or a crime reported, walking in and just privately rolling your eyes, thinking, you know, you need to be helping yourself a little bit more. You know, so you've got this high value stock. There's no security guard. There's no meet and greet. You're outside of the reach of the CCTV. And you want me to do what? I mean, it's got to be part of that.
And I think there is, you know, there should be some form of expectation upon businesses. And I think with all these, you'll get some excellent businesses that do a lot of good stuff. There are not within the retail world, so very different kind of business world. There are some very large expensive products that are sold and the security bits around it haven't been updated in many, many years. And actually, they know that, and if something gets stolen, then someone's going to go buy a new one. And sometimes, you know, you question, is there a commercial reason why some security products aren't as good as they should be from that perspective? And that's always difficult because, of course, the burden then comes back to policing to try and investigate that. You know, there are a limited number of police officers. You want to put them in the best possible place. And there are some really vulnerable people and they should be protected. But you then get that rub from policing, but where do we put our best resources? Because we need to protect the vulnerable, but equally you've got the rest of society you need to protect as well. And policing needs to be legitimate to apply to everybody. So you can't just focus everything on one particular area. You need to be very aware of how things affect different people.
Yeah, and I guess I remember seeing a sort of presentation on the increasing number of officers that spend their day, you know, sat in front of a computer, and that's not visible to the general public, but they're investigating all of these relatively new crimes going on in this sort of virtual world. And, you know, you could say we've recruited 400 new officers, but 395 of them might be sat at a desk staring at a screen all day long. And I guess that's a hard sell.
Yeah, it is. But of course, if you then look at the way that police forces have used that in social media. So, you know, when I was in Hampshire, they did a big bit of work around using Facebook, and you had that what we call the digital beat. So actually, they could go onto a neighbourhood group, you know, where I live, there are three or four large neighbour groups with 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 members each. They could put a message out and capture a large group of people. You know, there isn't really a physical way that you could do that in any other kind of way. You could stand outside a shop or a school or something, capture some people. But, you know, it's about being the most efficient. And of course, often, you know, when I was a neighbourhood sergeant, they, you know, the local town said, well, we don't see your officers. That's because we're in the places where the crime's taken place, which will be sometimes dark or dark alleys or after the normal hours where you're not going to see us. But, you know, trust me, we're actually out there stopping crime taking place.
Yeah, that's right. Just because you're not stood in front of Starbucks on a sunny afternoon doesn't mean that you're not out doing something. Yeah. So, look, I have to say, I think, you know, you've done a terrific job personally in terms of making business crime feel loved. And I know lots of retailers have got a lot of time for you, probably judging by how many people want to talk to you as well. So there's a double-edged sword there. And, you know, I don't think it's unfair to say necessarily some of your predecessors, they're sort of in a similar function, were perhaps seen as a little bit bureaucratic. And you know, you give the impression you've backed that up in terms of actions and things that you've done. But, you know, now there's this building expectation that you're bringing new hope to the galaxy, if you like. What does success in this role start to look like? What do you set out as your objectives, and what would you like to achieve?
Yeah, it's interesting. So you mentioned that, Paul, but I think, you know, the people like Sir Georgie Barnard who are replaced, and I think for every one of us, every iteration of us finds life a little bit easier. Georgie set up the NBCC and did an absolutely brilliant job. I've come in, and of course my job is that much easier because the work that Georgie did, and vice versa, and there are people before Georgie, etc. I think the world as we're seeing now, there's two things for me. I think one, the Home Affairs Select Committee, in terms of shop worker violence, has really put things on the map. You know, I supported Commissioner Dyson and DCC Blakeman in giving evidence back in April, May time, whenever it was. We're just waiting for the government response to be published on the back of the recommendations to the Home Affairs Select Committee. So that's interesting. And of course, at the same time, we've got the Police Crime and Court Sentencing Bill that's going through, and some suggestions around how that could help support it. And I think the other thing is that Katie Bourne, as a PCC within Sussex, has done a brilliant job. You know, she's picked up the portfolio for the MP for the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners. That didn't exist until last year. So whilst there was a policing one, there wasn't a PCC one. And of course, PCCs, their role is very much about serving the needs of the community. And we talked about business is a community. So I think, you know, Katie's had a great mandate there to go out there and really push that agenda. We've had a whole new cohort of PCCs that have been recently re-elected. I'm due to present to them, you know, they've now got a quarterly meeting. I'm due to present to them next week, week after next, about the work that's taken place. And I think the work that the policing minister has done with the National Retail Crime Steering Group and the work around the four or five workshops there, we've progressed that. More to do. And I think with all of this, we make some move. But trust me, I'm not sat here sat at my laurels. There's loads, loads more that we can do. And I think there's some real opportunity. So I think PCC is getting business crime on the policing crime plan will be a really positive start. Because they're the ones that hold chief constables to account. So they then give the chief constables that mandate to then they have to do some work to help support that. And we're doing some work nationally around identifying best practice amongst police forces that we can then share with other forces around, you know, what do I need to do? Here's some really good examples. And some of it's a bit challenging, you know, so when you then talk about information sharing, you know, it's quite a challenge for businesses because it's not the normal, you know, statutory partners or councils and healthcare places. And of course, there's a bit easier for them to share information, but we need to do it with business. But it's almost a bit of an offence. If I know that a criminal is going to commit crime, we need to share that with the business. You know, they need to give, if they need to have the opportunity to protect themselves. So they can only do that if we tell them, we help share that information. And that's a bit of a two-way flow. So there's a lot of work that we're doing in relation to that. A lot of work taking place about trying to improve reporting. Some work taking place in Sussex around that and some other areas as well. We're working with the Single Online Home, which is the police national website. How we can improve that, because we know that shop theft, as an example, is massively underreported. It's, you know, an inch between five and 10% is actually reported. And of course, without that data, we, you know, police need to know where is the demand, where do they need to put the resources. And of course, you need to know the extent of the problem. And of course, we know a lot of it is driven by prolific offenders. So you then goes into the work of addiction agencies and support around that. What can they do to help try and drive it? Because we're never going to arrest our way out of this scenario. It's about people protecting themselves, dealing with those prolific offenders, and working together to try and mitigate some of those challenges.
Yeah, you make an interesting point there about the reporting. It does feel, you know, I mean, whether it's 30, you know, over 30 years ago, 35, you know, as a graduate intake for Homebase when it was owned by Sainsbury's, you know, you wouldn't have dreamed of reporting, you know, any theft at all. You might just make a sort of mental note. It certainly didn't cascade, and you know, then over the years, it was frowned upon to report it as if you were somehow weak. you wouldn't put it in a book. And then we've moved along, and now I know some big retailers are, you know, the Co-op and Boots and the British Retail Consortium have been encouraging people to report, and it feels like the police now want that reporting to come forward. It feels like it's in a structured way that you can actually do something with and maybe go for more funding or feed it into the PCCs.
First of all, there is a cost to business to report crime, and I think, you know, the challenges for retailers has meant that there are less staff on the shop floor. So if you've got to lose a member of staff for 15 to 20 minutes or whatever it is to report a crime, and of course, that can take, the length of time can depend on when you're going to do it, what time of day it is, and even potentially what area you're in. So we know that's quite a cost for people to lose staff. But I think, but unless we know about it, and I've been to meetings previously, you know, as I say, as a local neighbourhood officer, challenged about crime. Did you report it? No. Well, how was I supposed to know about it if you didn't even report it? So we need to know the extent of the problem. You know, the last Home Office survey in 2018 suggested there were around 7 million shop thefts. I think that year, policing had about 350,000 reported. So we can see the extent of the gap. And certainly with COVID, we know that level has massively dropped over the last few months. But we do see that will probably increase. And I think, so the better that we can make it as a technological solution to make that a bit quicker, both from the retailers giving us information and us having to process it, because every crime does go through a bit of a manual process, because we've got to see what crime is, make sure it fits in certain criteria. So there is a bit of a manual bit our end. So there is that bit about trying to manage the demand coming in as well. But as I say, all the time it's not being reported, I think we're not getting the true effect or understanding of really what the problem is.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, if 7 million shop thefts are being recorded, then, you know, that there's a great business case for more resource to come in as well.
Yeah, and I think also it's when you then try and establish what worked, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because it's some cases you know, and I've seen it myself, you know, some areas that some local offices have done a great job, really got the community involved, got the business community, got their confidence. So they see an exponential increase in reporting of crime because they before it was traditionally really, really low. So they say, well, that initiative didn't really, really work. Well, actually quite the opposite. It's worked. And actually the consequence is probably more outcomes in terms of more offenders going to court and bigger sentencing. But as we will see more reporting because they want to tell us stuff because they know that we've got the confidence to be able to deal something with it. So it is a double-edged sword, but I think it's really important we get that data. And I think, I don't think it'll be many years from now where it will be direct bulk reporting that will come in from retailers, you know, in terms of the technology taking place around that direct crime reporting coming in, dealing with that bulk data, you know, artificial intelligence, machine coding, et cetera. You know, that's the world I think we'll be in a few years' time. But I think we will see, as a consequence, massively increased numbers of crime.
But I think it's a knock-on effect because the police feel like they're receptive to actually getting the numbers. The retailers have got impetus and, you know, there's more duty of care possibly around staff to make sure the incident's reported. Then on the back of that, there's some vendors starting to pop up because there's a commercial opportunity for them to provide software and apps and buttons and various bits to make that reporting process no longer 20 minutes off the shop floor, but 20 seconds, yes, you know, on the shop floor. And then again, it just shortens the timeline, doesn't it? And then becomes...
And even all to extend that beyond also the collection of the evidence. So, you know, we're doing a lot of work at the moment with a particular company that's working with currently 14 forces of how they collect their CCTV. Okay. And we're getting national agreements with some big retailers to make that a bit quicker. So they'll report a crime. We've got CCTV. We can get that sent via the cloud. You know, and it wasn't that long ago. Stuff was coming on CD discs, you know, through the post, which is kind of a bit laughable now. But of course, that's where we were at the time. You had to manually go through it and you had 3 hours to look at it. And we think it took place at this time. So it's difficult, but that's getting a lot quicker. And I can definitely see, and I know there are those that have got concerns about, but facial recognition. And I think it might not be lifetime facial recognition, but certainly, you know, post recognition in terms of we got a suspect, let's run it through our database and do that facial match. You know, why would we not do that? You know, it just seems so that kind of technology will increase and make the identification of offenders easier. And if you then have a prolific offender, actually, instead of then, you know, they did 3 or 4 offences, they've done 25, 36, 40 offences. And actually, whether it's sentencing or some other form of support to get them out of that crime system, you've then got, you know, you've then got the evidence to be able to get it through that system.
Yeah, it's got to be far simpler than, you know, burning some grainy image onto a CD-ROM and then getting in my car and driving it to the local station, trying to remember which crime reference number to associate and which police officer wanted the data and then just leaving it at the front desk for them. I mean, and that was for one incident, and you know, no wonder we only did the worst one every week, not the 300 that we had.
And of course, with high definition CCTV cameras, you won't get it on a disc anyway. So, you know, it's how you kind of manage that data, particularly with this quite a bit of streaming image. If you're particularly trying to capture the continuity of the offence, for instance, can be a challenge.
Yeah. So look, I want to come and talk to you. You came up with a fabulous idea, if I say so, for a retailer and policing collaboration award to go into the Fraud Awards. Before I just come and ask you about that, we're going to take a quick 30-second break where we'll hear from our sponsors and then we'll be back.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalised shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So welcome back to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Superintendent Patrick Holdaway. Patrick, we have covered a lot of ground so far, but as I alluded to just before that short break, the Retailer and Policing Collaboration Award, which was completely your idea, it's now made it onto the list of topics for the Fraud Awards here in the UK, and it will go into our other Fraud Awards around the world as well. But why do you think that's important? Yeah, we've had this conversation with police forces in the past. And you mentioned Georgie Barnard and her predecessors. And you're right, it's definitely progressing. But, you know, what's underpinning this renaissance, if you like, of the relationship? And why do you think it's important that we bring forward these collaborations and highlight them?
For me, I think I know of some really good examples. In every force, there will be examples. You know, we've got points of contact in every force and we speak to them. And we know that there's a lot of really good work that takes place with a number of retailers. Policing, often we wait for people. You know, we don't nominate ourselves. It's not something we do. It's not within our culture. We wait for people to nominate us. But I know, so I'm really keen that if the retailers out there have got some really good examples of local forces, we want to share the information. You know, for a police officer to be nominated for an award is a really big deal, particularly one outside of policing, you know, because that shows you've got the confidence of the community. And that's, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but we all join to make a bit of a difference and try and do et cetera, et cetera. So this is a massive reinforcement of that. If someone put you forward for an award. And I think it was a good example. And I think if we can do that, we can then showcase those to that force. That, you know, that force becomes very proud about their staff, what they've done and what they've achieved. And let's use it. And I think, you know, it's with all these things, we start, it's a bit like an oil tanker. Once we get it started, I can see that just kind of growing. And I think, as I say, you align that then with the interest in the PCCs. You know, they'll be keen to their forces doing bits and pieces. And I think it just will help drive that agenda. And I think I've seen that it's all about partnership. You can achieve so much more with partnership because there are different skill sets. There are some things I think I'm quite good at, but there's other stuff I'm rubbish at. And I need other people to support me, whether that's in or outside of policing, to make sure I deliver that to the best of my ability. And that's probably no different than anyone else. So I think that bit's really, really key.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So we are in the midst of, nominations have opened for the UK awards. We're going out bang in the middle of the awards process, and we've still got a couple of weeks to go. And I did ask the question of the team before you and I spoke today. And amazingly, you know, we don't know the details, but we can see some nominations that have come in. But a couple of them have actually been police-led that have then brought the retailer on board. Well, so it feels like there is a shift. Now, you know, whether that's you enthusing to the opportunity. I mean, so far, most of them, you know, they are retailer led and they're sort of dragging the police along, yeah, going, this is an amazing collaboration. But to see police, you know, putting retailers forward as a great piece of work, you know, we never would have seen that kind of cooperation, you know, 5 years ago, certainly not 10 years ago. It was a them and us at that point. And it does feel as if something is changing. So I've got to ask, you know, how far do you think this can go? Not just nominations for the fraud awards, but the whole, you know, MBCC collaboration, the process, you know, where can it end up?
Yeah, I suppose it's really that business crime is a very generic and a very, very wide term, but I use it because we could well understand it. But I think it's just seen as a crime type. It's something that people put a bit of time and effort into it. And I think, you know, the recent uplift to police officers provides that opportunity. And I think once that cohort of new officers gets through and they're trained, then forces do, they massively see the value and they really want to do it. You know, I've yet to speak to chief officers, I'm not interested. They all do. They are just juggling so many things at the moment, and that can be a bit of a challenge. And I like to think that doesn't mean they're not doing stuff they should be doing, but there's always a thing, actually, we could do a bit more. And I think hopefully that would give them the capacity to be able to do exactly that. So I think it's just trying to develop that. And I think, so it's, you know, I talk retail, but actually there's a lot of what we've been doing around, you know, guides with businesses around how they deal with domestic abuse within their own organisation. And you get some of these massive kind of online retailers, you know, the size of their warehouses, the amount of staff they've got, you know, they're small towns, they're small villages. So, you know, they're going to have issues of people that fall out in domestic abuse. So let's give you some of that guidance of how you can actually deal with that, the bits you need to flag up to us, the bits we can help support in terms of some of that risk. So it's not just limited just to crime. I think it develops, it goes beyond that, hate crime, you know, modern slavery, and other kind of areas. So I think it's just finding a way that I can weave that kind of golden thread of business engagement, which is, for me, it's more all about, through any area of policing and how we can do that and get the most out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, you know, we're in a fortunate position in getting to talk to actually, you know, retailers around the world, and they might share and ask questions about what other people are doing, and we connect people together. But you know, I don't think I've come across anybody that hasn't heard of what you're doing and of you personally. I think that has to be huge credit to what you've done so far. I would say on behalf of, you know, the retailers collectively, you know, keep putting your bit of pressure on the PCCs as well. And I'll keep banging that drum because I think that's super important that it's a priority to them. And I have to say, it's been a huge pleasure to have you as my guest today. Long may your success continue. And who knows, look forward to perhaps having you back on in 12 months' time to hear about the fantastic progress and the next evolution of the MBCC and what you're able to achieve. But for now, Superintendent Holloway, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.